Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome.
Hello,
welcome,
everyone.
Welcome,
hello.
That was a little musical theater welcome for you all to set you up for what we're in for today.
Some cabaret.
Some Candor and Ebb stylings, because this is a couple days after the Tonys, the Tony Awards, which were really fun to go to for obvious reasons. If you don't know anything about the Tonys, those are the awards given by the theater wing to celebrate accomplishments on Broadway. And something kind of historical happened this past year, which is, the pandemic happened, but that meant that if you had won a Tony or had been nominated for a Tony, this was the longest period of time that people could hold a nomination or be the kind of reigning champion of a certain category.
Yeah.
So, it was like the hose was being released. Going to that show was such a great little family reunion, and it was a lot of fun. I don't know. Did you watch them, Esty?
Of course I watched them. I was rooting for Jeremy O'Harris the entire time.
Yeah, our buddy Jeremy. What? That's a dude we got to get in the show.
He's
a wunderkind.
He's so brilliant. We did
writer
a song
of slave
with him.
Play.
Yeah, writer
That's
of slave
right.
play. And writer of the movie Zola.
Mm-hmm.
Along with
and
Jeanette
many other
Bravo.
Things. He's got a lot of other
he
things
does,
cooking.
There isn't anything he can't do.
He's definitely a multi-hyphenate
so,
kind of kid.
Yeah, he's just so cool.
And he's worked with a lot of our friends. He wrote the Tommy did a play with
yeah,
Alan
Daddy.
Cumming that was the Jeremy wrote Daddy, which I was so sad to miss. I never miss anything on Broadway, especially if I know literally all three people involved. It was Jeremy, Alan Cumming, and Tommy. All people who belong on this podcast. But anyway, yeah, Jeremy was he did not take home a Tony, but he certainly will. Soon, I'm sure. And he's got accolades already in his life. I'm sure he'll just have to add to the pile. But
he's just so brilliant and smart. But yeah, I loved watching the Tonys. Yeah, man. You know
who was great on the Tonys? Did you see Josh Groban pop up on the Tonys? Because he's on our
on
show
our
today.
On our podcast today. Great
he's
segue,
on,
Darren.
On
Can always count on you for an impeccable segue.
Well, that's why I brought it up, because I got to see him in person over the past almost 2 years now, year and a half. We don't live too far from each other in Los Angeles, and we have these kind of like not too dissimilar from our initial pre-podcast FaceTimes and continual FaceTimes that we have, Esty. But every now and then I'll chat with Josh just about random shit. Not as often as I do with you, but enough to the point where I'm like, God, this guy is just like so friendly. I even forget how we became pals, just like shit around New York, and we have enough similar pals, and something about the, I don't know, Broadway musician guy thing. Where anytime I've spent time with him, he's just so wildly gregarious, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And I told Josh after the Tonys, when I finally saw him after trying to see him for like the past year and a half at this after party, I said, you know what I hate about you, Josh Groban? You know what I fucking hate? Is that you're this really fun, cool guy, very likable, and then when you open your mouth to sing, you sound just like Josh Groban. and then I'm like, why
asshole.
Am I crying? Why? What are these tears down my face? Why do you have the voice? Why are you touched by God?
I know. Where does that come
like,
from?
It's insane.
And how do we bottle it?
I don't know. It's so otherworldly. Because even on this podcast, like he'll say, yeah, guys, you know, it's like I travel around a lot, and it's kind of hard to be Josh Groban sometimes, but you know, I work really hard. And then I sing like this. You're like, what? What the fuck? I have like such a cognitive dissonance between this like very kind of nevish like charm ball, and then like what? You sound like Josh fucking Groban, man. And that's what, like, because it happens on the Tonys. You can watch it. He does this, like, bit. He's funny. He's with Leslie Odom Jr. They're being super cool together. And then he starts singing Beautiful City from Godspell. And I'm just like, what? It's so, so obscenely gorgeous. And you're like, oh, I'm so glad this is, like, in the world and that it does well because it's so gorgeous.
Oh, I know. You know.
I can't imagine what it was like to see him in a... What did you see him in again? You talk about
I saw him in Fame.
Oh, and he didn't even have a song. That's what he says.
But he didn't
that's
sing. So but nuts. I... I think it was just being like 13 or 14 and like seeing like older boys, like high school boys act and being so good at it. And also like seeing the play, like seeing Fame at technically Fame High was also like such a mind fuck.
Totally are imitating life. I get it.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience when I was like seeing older kids do theater when I was like in eighth grade and I saw my brother's high school do a production of Guys and Dolls and I went, I want to go here.
Exactly.
They're like kids. I'm a kid. Well, they didn't seem like kids at the time, but I was like, if this is what I'm signing up for, like
then
I want
doing
to do
it.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought it was so cool. And also like, you know, the Taron Killam of it all. I'm also watching Impeachment. So he's like,
oh yeah. Taron's top amazing.
Taron's amazing. He's yeah, and like his, well, he but... doesn't, I mean, I don't think Taron like advertises that he also has like an incredible voice.
Oh, don't tell me that. Of course he does.
He was in Evita at Loxa and he played Perone.
Fucking A.
At Loxa. So like
all these talented dudes.
I know, so talented. And like, but you know, the things that he's known for are like, you know, comedy and acting and SNL. But like I knew him as like an eighth grader as like the guy with the incredible voice. So like it's so weird. I knew Josh Groban as like the really good actor.
Right. I mean, this is just like what we're talking about on this podcast all the time. It's like they all tie together. You know who has a really good voice?
Who?
That like I'm waiting for him to drop it on everybody and everyone goes, what the fuck?
Who?
Like it's sort of a Taron situation. Bryan Cranston.
No
Bryan
way.
Bryan Cranston is he's got this beautiful like tenor
where? Where did
voice.
You hear him sing?
This was years ago. It was right when Breaking Bad was starting. It wasn't the phenom that it became. And we were at some event for casting directors or something and everybody was sharing stories about, you know, casting to people in their life that whether it was a funny story, the point is we were just telling stories and something happened to where he had to like, mic went out or something and he had to vamp. Okay. And there was a piano and someone started playing piano and he just started like singing, like kind of making up a song and being cheeky. But like I did a double take where I was, you know, it was more than somebody just singing, you know, a joke. It was like, oh, whoa, bro, you can sing. And ever since then, anytime I see Cranston at stuff, I'm always like, hey, man, I know your secret. Like, when are you going to, like, come out?
Drop that record.
Yeah, like in a Broadway show or a movie musical, and everybody goes, holy shit, like, we thought he was incredible already. And so I'm just waiting in the wings. He's going to do it for something. I don't know what I'm at liberty to say because I think I'll just share this story. Cranston told me once, because every time I see him, this is like, you know, that auntie that sees you and always brings up the same thing.
Yes.
This is me with Bryan Cranston because I don't have like much else to talk with him about because I'm, you know,
right?
I'm trying to keep it cool around Bryan fucking Cranston. And so this is maybe like 7 or 8 years ago. Or whenever after Les Mis came out and I asked him, I was like, hey man, when are you gonna do a musical? And he's like, you know, I really, for the longest time, I really wanted to be Javert, but I wasn't a star, you know, I didn't have I just couldn't have been it. And, you know, without getting into the Russell Crowe thing that happened in that movie, you know, if you're going to sell a movie musical, you got to build it around stars. So I get the financial like reasons for having someone like that. But there, let's just say there's an alternate universe where Bryan Cranston was Javert in the Les Mis movie. And in my mind, that would have been the best part of the movie.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine?
Him singing stars? Holy shit. That would have been
unreal. I want to hear him sing. And you know what? The craziest part of this whole thing is that to really bring it full circle is Cranston was in That Thing You Do.
That's right. I heard that. I forgot about this. Where is he again? I forgot.
Like,
somebody brought
right
this
before,
up to me.
Right before the Oneaters come on stage on that like fake TV show.
Yeah.
He's like the astronaut.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? It really
That's awesome.
All, you know, it always points back to That Thing You Do. It really like,
wow.
Truly like
six degrees, 7 degrees of that.
It's crazy. It always, we always manage to bring it back.
Well, let's move it forward. We were talking about Josh and, something I wanted to talk about on this thing, and I'm sorry, I feel like I talked a lot during this one because there's so much about him that I'm so enamored with. And I know you are too, and we kind of got into that after we were done. You know, you say it on the podcast, but just you talk about how much his being at Loxa was such a huge influence on your life.
It was.
But something that I didn't say during the podcast was, you know, he's very self-deprecating and very charmingly so, about being kind of like an introverted guy, but he has such an extroverted personality. And you know, you hear that and you're like, that can't be true. You're so out there. And I thought that sounds like one Esty Haim. I thought that was very similar. That would you say you're an extroverted introvert?
Introverted extrovert. Yes.
Introverted extrovert.
I guess
I don't know which one is the correct term. What's the one that I'm saying where the outside is very extroverted, but the inside is introverted?
I mean, I, through therapy, have figured out that I am an introverted extrovert. And kind of the definition is that I recharge my batteries by being on my own.
Yeah.
Extroverts recharge their batteries by being around other people.
Yeah.
I think that's you, Darren.
That's me, exactly. But that's where I split between me and Josh, because there's a lot of things that I think we do have in common, and some of those things I'm like, I don't want to flatter myself because I think he is an extraordinary human being. There are things about him that I strive to be more like, but at least on the personality tip, I would put him more in a similar Esty category, and just in the way that he in our conversations off the podcast, how he's, you know, I just, those kind of people fool you into thinking they're really out there, you know, go extroverts, but he's an incredibly pensive, thoughtful inside person. And you get a piece of that in the interview. He's extraordinarily...
he's really funny.
He's very, very funny.
Did not know that about him, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing I always tell people is that Josh, and not, oh, you're pretty funny for being that famous singer guy. Like, he is just fun. Like, if he was at a party and we didn't know jack shit about him, we'd be like, this dude's fucking funny.
Yes.
Yeah, very witty. But I was going to say, I mean, I think that's all connected to a very cerebral mind. And he's just dialed into something that I really dig. And this was so hard to put together because we had this a couple days ago, and then like a flight was delayed, and then we had to move something, and then we were going to do it the day after we recorded this. But then he was like, I got to be in a car in DC because he has to go talk to like members of Senate about climate change. And I was like, this paints three things to me. One, Josh is clearly a busy dude. Two, he cares about people and the environment. And three, it just speaks to how like amenable and like gracious he is with his time and energy. And people should know who are listening to this, we don't have like a huge pro team of like bookers or anything. And like,
no, it's us.
It's just me and Esty, and Terrence being our producer is kind of holding it all together. But Esty and I just reach out to people we know, and it sucks. It's not a fun thing. Like, if you asking people, especially when they're like a certain entertainment profile status, is like kind of like, it's embarrassing, and you don't want to do it. You don't want to ask anybody for anything. Like, can you do my podcast? And so when people meet that request with like total disarming support, you're just like, oh, thank God, I love you.
Yeah.
So Josh was one of those guys.
Yeah.
He's one of the great ones.
He's really awesome. Is. I'm so glad that we got him on the pod and that I got to talk to him. I've never met him before. I've never spoken to him before.
I thought you had. That's why I kind
no,
of...
No, it was a that thing I do. That thing I do first, I think.
I wish I had more of an official introduction. Esty, this is Josh Esty. I just barreled right into it.
I mean, it was great. I mean, that's probably for the best. I think that I would have just been even more awkward than normal if there had just been like an official like, please, you two meet. I actually think that it was better that we just kind of went into it.
Yeah. Well, having said that, let's definitely get into it.
Let's do it.
Josh Groban. Clearly, we love the guy. Says a lot of really amazing, inspiring things. And yeah, let's get into it, ladies and gentlemen. Here's That Thing I Do with Josh Groban.
Woo!
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Oh, man. I mean,
Esty,
this is
great
this
to see
has
you.
Been a
Darren,
day already. But yes.
What a motley crew.
This is quite a motley crew. People can't see behind us right now, but Josh and I are living that
we have
the
same
life. Because we have the same, like, hotel AC grill.
Marriott.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Wallpaper. Yeah.
I'm jealous. Honestly, I wish I was there. I'm going to be honest.
We all made it, guys. We all made
we
it.
All made it.
Where are we all coming from? I'm in New York. Essie's in L.A. Where
I'm
are
in L.A.
Essie, if we all had been able to plan this a little more detailed, we would all be in the same place. We would be all sipping a cup of tea right now. But such is
I
the
know.
World right now.
I would no, be no, no. in a Marriott with you.
There you go. It would be a great time.
That sounds like a podcast.
This
Two
episode
guys, a
of
girl
That
and
Thing I
a
Do
Marriott?
Is brought to you by Marriott. Thank you for sponsoring our show. No, they definitely do not. Well, I'm going to jump right into it, guys, because speaking of being in hotels and being bouncing around, the current situation we find ourselves in is very indicative of the life that we all, for better or for worse, chose. This, I'll have our listeners know that this was, it wasn't a complicated thing to figure out, but it was a bit of a slice of life between the sort of delightful Michigas of our respectable
yeah
I lost it testicles wallet and watch spectacles but our particular choices in life have led us to these kind of funny I've been on a text chain between Esty and Josh figuring out were we going to do this interview today, in an hour, tomorrow, yesterday? And it was one of these back and forths that was really like a kind of a microscope into Josh's current life. Josh, you're doing shows right now, yes?
Yeah, I'm doing a few shows this week. We're not like on an official tour. We're going to wait, I think, another 10 months or so to kind of put out a bigger trek. It's just such a weird moving target right now, and we had I think as and maybe Esty, you dealt with the same thing, and Darren, you as well, that some dates were just kind of held like where we were supposed to do a long, long time ago. And they've kind of continued to ask us like, hey, at some point, can we just do these dates? And so these are kind of like that. These were some things we were going to do just for fun right before COVID hit. And we thought they would go away, and they came back and said, hey, we're still here if you want to pop by and do it. And so, it's a fun opportunity for me to get my group and my band and my crew out there, and for us to do some intimate fun, just kind of put our feet back in those waters.
Ugh, that's I'm great. So jealous. I'm so jealous.
Every day is a winding road, guys.
Oh, moving get a little bit closer.
I mean, 10, oh, nice. That was a Josh Groban album nod. Closer. Sorry, I don't know if that was too on the nose.
Oh.
Closer. Am I the only Josh Groban fan here?
No.
you're just picking words out of the sky that might have been.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, I'm pretty sure that's a Josh Groban album.
You said the word "you," and of course,
and reminded me of
song
it.
"You Raised Me Up." So yeah. Of course, lots of really. Yes.
I won't say any of those words for the rest of the interview.
These are deep cut references, Darren.
Take a shot every time we say "you."
Oh man.
Yeah. Take a shot.
That sounds fun
for our listeners that are of age.
It is.
God, there's so many things I want to say. I mean, like literally 10 minutes ago, we didn't know if we were going to do this. And I just love that we're here because it has been a moving target for all of us.
How much sleep have you had? I have to know.
I've had enough. I know. I do look
if
a little
worse. If only
your
listeners could see the epic bedhead that is occurring right now. This is like,
yeah, I look
I
like
mean, you've always, you always, your hair is always epic, Darren, but this is true fork in the light socket.
Yep.
sleep.
I think it's because I'm doing this. I'm putting my hand through my hair because I'm kind of like rubbing my face trying to wake up.
You either had too little sleep or too much sleep with this hair, and I can't tell which it is.
Well, you and I were with each other a few days ago at the Yale Tonys, which I had a fabulous time at. I thought you were wonderful
yes.
at.
Very
so
fun.
Jealous.
We were out till, I was out till about 6 a.m. And that wasn't even, I won't say, it's not like we were doing anything particularly salacious. It's just one of these, I just kept being up and wanting to hang out. I don't know about you, man, but
yeah.
I don't like leaving parties. I'm the last guy standing.
But also, who can blame us right now? I mean,
exactly.
And
thank
one of the
saying.
Things that I've always loved about New York is just the kind of the unexpected hang. And that was a night. I mean, we ran into it at some point. You shot into the after
yeah,
party
at like 3 a.m, thinking everybody would be done,
like a star in a china shop. And you rolled in, and then the party really began. But just to be able to have like a drink or seven and a conversation with your fellow theatrical community. It just like before we knew it, it was like everybody was making up for lost time. We were all catching up. We were all, you know,
yes.
just enjoying letting our hair down a little bit. And the hours just flew by because we've had a year. So I don't blame you one bit.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
And I was right
That's
there with
totally
you.
True.
So I've taken me 48 hours to recover from that night too.
And before anybody who listens to this, there were no official after parties for the Tonys for a variety of reasons. This was a very intimate gathering of some friends that knew each other at a friend's house.
Right.
So it was like a small little thing that, I too felt that. And I was like, it's not like we were going crazy. It's just, we were just chatting like you do. And it was so nice. And you're right.
It was just so nice to laugh again and just, you know, and just feel, you know, and of course everybody there was, we were all safe and vaxxed and, you know, just to have an opportunity to just be near other people that you enjoy and just kind of, you know, shoot the shit and have a good time. It was, you know, we've always enjoyed doing that. I'm way more of an introvert, Darren, I think, than you are. But I every so often, if you give me the right glass of something and the right environment, I can hang in there too. And so, I had a really, really good time. So anyway, yes, we're there's a little burning of the candle going on right now.
I'm still on that schedule, which is why I keep going to sleep late and keep waking up late. So that's why I look like the Riddler.
I actually don't think you look like the Riddler. I found a photo of actually what you look like right now, and I need to show. I'm going to show you on.
Okay. Oh, I look like a racer head. Yeah.
Very
I do
eraser
look like a racer head
going on.
Thank you. I'm trying to make my hair look more
classic.
Like a racer head.
That's
classic.
I mean, it looks great. I love a David Lynch reference on a Wednesday morning.
Thank you. Oh, that's what I was going
really
for.
We really do.
I'm being way too chatty. This is this. I'm going to pass off to Esty because
you need to get back to sleep.
No, yeah. I'm tired.
It's nap time.
I have to go now.
Yeah, do I need to go to
you
bed?
You guys are LA kids, and this is something that's come
yes,
up a bit in our podcast where we interview a lot of folks that I didn't realize. I did know you were from Los Angeles, but there's a lot of cross section between you two. You guys went to the same school.
I don't know if does Josh know this? I don't know if Josh knows this.
We're Loxa kids, right?
Yeah, you went to Loxa.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Never gets
crazy.
Old.
Well, the crazy thing is Josh, when you were a senior, I was in eighth grade.
Okay.
And I thought okay. Just to set the scene. And
could
I
have been
really
worse.
Wanted
could have been third grade. I mean, I'm used to feeling old these days, but
this is an integral
we
part of
the
story.
Hey, we were at the school at the same time, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, this is literally an integral part. It started in ninth grade, right?
There you go.
Your pores are tiny. You look not a day over 30. Okay, you're fine. All right. Well, I'm not aging anyone.
I've got some TikTok filters going on right now, going through my Zoom.
You look great. We all have the beauty filter on, Josh. We all have the beauty filter on
Where
on these
is
Zoom
that? I
calls.
I gotta find mine.
Oh well, there you go. I know you. Yeah. I mean, so I went to like Loxa has this open house. And I wanted to do theater. Oh, there we go. You guys, Josh Groban.
Is that a beauty filter?
No, I don't know how the fuck you're doing that. I'm so impressed.
I don't know either.
That's really amazing.
How are you doing that?
I just went to the filters button.
Oh, and you're number one.
God damn it.
I don't know how the fuck to do this.
Ain't I cute? We're audio only, so I got to stop playing around with the filters.
People should know. Okay, so on this Loxa journey, I'm in eighth grade. I really want to go to Loxa. I wanted to be a theater major. And I went to the open house, and one of the like, Loxa kind of does this like show pony thing where like they get like the best of the best at the school to like perform for like kids that maybe want to come to this school. And one of those people was Finn Wittrock, who was a freshman when I was in eighth grade. So I see Finn and I'm like,
another
Loxa alum. So I see him perform and I'm like, oh, this is where I'm going. And then a girl that I met was like, and I don't even remember what play it was because I think I was stoned. But they were like, we're going to see the musical tonight at Loxa. Do you want to come? And I was like, yes. And it was you and Taryn Killam were in a play. We're in a musical.
And Taryn Killam? Are you telling me Taryn Killam too? All of you fucking guys went to...
Taryn was in my class.
Yes.
Oh my fucking God.
What play? So wait, what musical was it? I know Mr. Sorensen. I know it was a Mr. Sorensen play.
I think it was that at that point with the one that I did with Taryn was probably Fame. Did you see Fame?
Yes. That's what it was.
Yeah. I had one of the only non-singing roles, ironically. It was I played Mr. Scheinkopf, the music teacher, the German music teacher.
Oh,
and I just couldn't cut it. I couldn't cut it for a singing role.
Because there were just so many fucking amazing vocalists.
But the next year I got to be Tevye. But I really, between my Fame year and my Tevye year, I took a lot of voice lessons.
Well, I mean, that's Loxa kind of does that to you, right? It's this. Yeah. It's kind of this machine that like forces you to kind of rise to the occasion, right?
And also discover what it is that your kind of your thing is, because I could sing, but I think that most definitely during that rehearsal for Fame, I didn't like know I could sing inside. There was like the light bulb was there, but it was cranked way, way, way down, and so I was probably super shy and wasn't ready for that.
This is something that we really like to get the heart of in the show. One of the taglines that we say is that, you know, Esty is primarily known as a musician and has a big background in theater. I'm primarily probably more known as an actor, but I have a pretty heavy music and background in music. Jeez, words, Darren. And one of the things that I've always admired about you is, you know, aside from you being painfully charming and very fun and very talented, it's the sort of pathway that you went down where you were an actor, and you are an actor. You still are an actor, of course, but this primary thing that most people would understand you for was something you did kind of have to unlock and fall into. And so I know you've had to tell, I think for our listeners, you can Wikipedia, look up a ton of stuff on Josh. I mean, I know you've had to go through this story 1,000 times, so I won't necessarily.
I'm not above a rehash.
We love a rehash.
Well, it depends on how much you want to convey to our listeners, but I think that moment, yeah, I'm curious, in high school.
Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think, have you ever been interviewed or talked to anyone else that went through the Loxa experience and like the...
No.
Oh, let's get deep. Let's get deep.
I'll pass it to Esty. This is interesting.
This is the first. And I have a lot of things to say about that time in my life and what Loxa meant to me and what my experience was. Having that community and that arts education and those kids that kind of were very like-minded at that time in my life, it was pivotal. It was absolutely kind of just soul-saving for me in so many ways. And so, you know, whether or not I had the chorus role or whether I had the lead role, it was kind of inconsequential, because what I had was like friends that I got along with for the first time in my career and grades that were really great for the first time in my student life. And
yes,
and teachers that understood
teenage
how,
Josh, right? Like 16,
yeah,
17.
Yeah. Teenage yeah. Josh, who had kind of bounced around a little bit through the LA school systems. And it took me a minute to find my place. And it was like, you know, it wasn't accidental, because my parents are amazing. We had, you know, a lot of people had told us Loxa was really great for artistic kids. But I didn't realize just how profound the impact of having an arts education in my school day would have on the other parts of my schooling life. Like it made everything else better. My homework was more focused.
Yes.
My academic classes were way more in tune. And had I not gone to Loxa, there's no question that I would not have, all those pieces would not have come together cerebrally in order to get into a school like Carnegie Mellon. Which is like 12 musical theater students and then like 50,000 rocket scientists. So
right.
Yeah, it was really, really, I hold such a special place in my heart for that school, as I'm sure you do too.
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
So you went, when you said finding your place, you were bopping around from school to school. And so you go to Loxa because you say, guys, I want to be an actor. Like, again, at this point, it sounds like you didn't really think you were a singer, that you could sing or that you had a voice. So what was the driving force
I'm gonna be an actor, mom and dad.
It wasn't really even so much about like what choice in my career do I want to make? What do I want to major in? Because that's what I want to do. It was honestly, it was just pure whether or not I had confidence in one area or another. I was not a confident kid going into Loxa. I was, you know, not doing well in other schools. I was kind of late diagnosed with ADD and all these other things, and just it was a very kind of complicated system to find out like where I fit in and how best I was going to fit into a school system. And so, you know, I think I was just coming in very, very, very shy. I had a lot of talent, but I did not have the confidence to step out into the light and say, I've got this talent, which some kids have them. God bless them. The ones that are like have the spinny bow tie at 5 years old and want to go out there and shine. I needed that push. So for me, no, I was not ready to go out and audition right away and say, I need this lead role. I relied on the teachers to push me to the front and say, hey, I believe in you. Yeah. And you're going to do this because I think you can. And I know you're scared and I know you wouldn't do it on your own, but I'm going to push you to do that. That's what my best art teachers did for me, is they said, you're not going to do it for yourself. We recognize that because we're great teachers and we're going to place you there and give you the spot to do it anyway.
Was there like an aha moment for any of those teachers that you can remember? Because, you know, they simply didn't just see you in a room and said, okay, you kid, we're going to push you. Something must have happened, or you must have done something that made a teacher go, oh, okay, kid, like you're up.
Yeah. And that moment actually, you know, happened earlier than Loxa, you know, because I did go to other schools and all of the arts teachers that I had at those schools, that was the through line of the great education that I had was whenever that was that one music teacher, that one choir teacher, I always clicked with that right away, even if some of the rest of the school was not what I needed it to be. And there was a choir teacher, a guy named Richard Barrett I was in seventh grade at Windward. Remember Windward, SD?
Oh my God. Of course. I knew a lot of people that went to Windward.
Yeah. No, Windward and Crossroads and all those. Oh yeah. Crossroads, LA Windward, school, Harvard, Brentwood, Marlborough. And yeah, there's that, you know, there was the, you know, everybody like, we played flag football with basically. So he was one of those guys that said, hey, you know, I was singing in the back row of the choir. And he said, I'm going to put you in the front. I'm going to give you a solo for our kind of cabaret night. And,
how old are you?
I was terrified. I was 13 with a voice that had not yet changed. So I was like a boy soprano, 13. And he said, I'm going to give you, yeah, oh yeah. No, this was, and I have told the story a lot on stage, but it was one of those moments where I for sure thought that was going to be death. Like that was going to be the end of it for me. Like, but I was so enthused by the fact that this teacher was giving me this opportunity and I didn't want to flunk the choir class because that was my favorite class in the whole school. So I did it. And it was a song called Swonderful. It was George Gershwin's Swonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Swonderful,
marvelous, you care for me.
Very SD, very LA side note, Jason Schwartzman accompanied me on the drums behind me.
No!
Get out of here.
Ninth grader, I was seventh, ninth grader Jason Schwartzman, who was in the jazz ensemble, played drums
this
behind me.
This is too much for me. And our listeners know how much I love Jason Schwartzman.
I crushed it. It was an amazing moment. And it was one of those, like, you know, slow clap, standing ovation like moments. And
wow.
And so it wasn't enough for me to be the show-offy kid, but it was enough for me to know that being in the arts was a language that I could do well when there were a lot of other areas where I wasn't feeling like I was fitting in. And so that was the kind of the first aha moment. And then
God bless, then I had to worry about
my grades. I took a side.
Yeah, there's those.
I know.
Man, you said this at the Tonys, and we all at the Tonys takes does the due diligence of honoring arts educators around the country, and you guys kind of alley-oop that. And man, you gave me goosebumps just of like, it is fucking amazing and undeniably, to me, it's just so obviously important. I mean, it's amazing. It takes one person to say, hey, kid, you're up, and it changes your entire life, and not in any kind of hyperbolic, over romantic way, like, quite literally. The way you thought about yourself and the way you related to the world was forever redefined because one person just had some belief in you and support. I mean, that's so beautiful, man. That's awesome.
Loxa does this thing. I mean, I think that this goes along with what you're saying, Josh, is I think Loxa is like that, but on steroids. I mean, you're in a school where everyone is completely like-minded, where all of your teachers truly push you to be the best that you can be, for better or for worse, in ways that, you know, in some ways are like not the most kosher. they kind of, at least in the theater department, it felt a lot like sometimes teachers were pitting kids against each other kind of fostering this like almost like healthy competition between kids. But it made you, again, like rise to the occasion. It really pushed you. And I think that when I look back on, you know, being at Loxa, and I went from freshman to senior year. I think when you went, it was only sophomore to senior year. They like wanted you to be able to have like a normal high school experience for your freshman year and then realize how fucked up normal high school is and be like, thank God I have this safe place.
High school's hard enough. Like,
So to be, I think that, I feel like whenever I talk to a fellow alum, that's kind of always the takeaway is like, yeah, man, like it just felt so nice to be within a school where everyone kind of wanted the same thing and everyone... It was kind of the relationship, I think, to like when you see basketball players on the same team kind of competing with each other to be the best. Like, you know, I'm so bad with sports analogies. That is not my strong suit.
But did you feel like it was really that competitive when you were there, Esty?
Yes.
Okay, that's interesting.
And was that your kind of own take? Like, that's how you perceived it, or like, do you think how much of that was actual?
It's interesting because honestly, every class can have its own, you know, mini culture and mini dynamics. And it really is just about like which group of kids you get at which particular time.
Exactly.
There have been years where I've gone to a school and like the class was just like, oh, I cannot hang in this class. And then there've been years where it's like, everybody's just, you know, just very easygoing and very supportive and all that stuff. I lucked out that so many of the kids that I was in class with during my, 11th and 12th, because I was only there for 2 years, were pretty chill. They were pretty chill and pretty supportive and yes, had ambitions to go off and to do theater, but some of them didn't. Some of them were just excited that they had the arts in their lives and that was giving them the foundation that they needed to feel like better and more well-rounded people to go off and study law and study whatever else. So, and that was what I think if I had had an overly type A, overly razor blades between the keys, competitive experience, then I might not be here. I might have just decided that was not for me.
Really?
Maybe Esty, having that that particular class for you was the very thing you needed to become a music superstar. Was like this is what it takes, man. This
Maybe.
Is what it takes. And I was already so demoralized by the time I entered Loxa that I was just so happy for everybody to be like, everybody gets a participation trophy.
Oh no! I mean, there's a slight caveat. I think that we were all really competitive with one another, but we were also all really good friends. I mean, when you're with a group of people for 4 years, especially during high school from 14 to 18, we definitely there was a lot of love there. But I think that there was also like, you know, especially I think by senior year, the majority of people in my theater class decided to pursue theater, and we all knew there were only so many spots at Carnegie Mellon. There were only so many spots at NYU. There were only so many, like, all these conservatories.
At the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Yes, exactly.
Michigan, yep.
100%.
I know, I just forgot to mention that.
I know. Sorry, slipped my mind. Listen, I didn't think that I was good enough to go to Michigan. The only places that there was part of me that was like, I just want to live my, you know, Felicity dreams and move to New York and go to NYU and fall in love with my RA and work at Dean and DeLuca. That was like my dream.
I didn't get into NYU. So, you know, there you go.
Well, see that. So I got into NYU and I got into Carnegie Mellon, but my parents didn't want to pay for it. So I ended up going to UCLA anyway. But I think that within our class, there was definitely support. And I have to believe this was also just something I picked up on within the teachers there. It really felt like they would single people out and be like, this is the rubric. This is what you need to strive for. And it was kids in the class. And I think that for better or for worse, it did foster this sense of like, okay, I really need to step up my game.
I mean, definitely. I was gonna say, outsider looking in at this like fucking like Hogwarts scenario that you guys are painting for like
total, truly.
I mean, even whether or not there was an actual conscious attempt at creating any kind of competition or not, if you're in the same class as like fucking Jason Schwartzman and Taryn, it's like, and you're with Finn and all these other people, it's like, yeah, you're with people who are like you're in the Olympic tent. So you're like, all right, I want to like up my game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because this person's really good.
Nobody was being an asshole about it. I wasn't in a class full of jerks, but it was just simply like to that. We're all saying the same thing, which is that just to be around that level of talent for the first time in my schooling life, there was this feeling of stepping it up. And I felt that way with, you know, at CMU, and I was joking with Leslie Odom Jr. during the rehearsals of just like, all of a sudden, you know, my analogy for it is like, we were all, you know, after that I had done Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof. I was entering college feeling like I had reached my full mojo, confident, like, I can do this musical theater thing. And we were all the hot shit quarterbacks of our prospective arts high schools coming into a place like CMU. And all of a sudden we have freshmen sing and, you know, Rory O'Malley and Katie Mixon and Griffin Matthews and Leslie Odom Jr. all going one after another. Whew. And we're going, time to step it up. I need to get better. And so,
I would have loved to be in that room. The first time you guys hear each other sing and just seeing the looks on your faces, that would be
terrifying. Because entering college is already terrifying. And then college for like a performance degree where all of a sudden you're with your class and you're all just like, I mean, everybody's just so unbelievably prolifically talented. Those were a lot of stress calls back to the old home front. Those nights, those first few nights of freshman year, I don't belong here.
I have a question, a little, maybe less about Loxa and just more about your own sort of development as an all around artist. I mean, everybody on this phone is this chat is a multi instrumentalist. Not saying we're all like prolifically unbelievable at each instrument, but we can play a couple different things. And I always love it when I find you on the drums, Joshua. And I always wondered, like, where did that come from? Like, at what point were you playing in bands? Because you're a great pianist, too. And I always tell this about people who are fans of yours. I go, you know, Josh is like, there's so many things up his fucking sleeve. It drives me nuts. He's fantastic. Like, you're a great drummer.
Takes one to know one, Darren.
Well, know me, sir. Know me, because I look at your shit and I go, I'm not surprised, always impressed, and always inspired. Like, thanks, seriously, Darren. Like, you're a great drummer. Not like, oh, he's pretty good for an actor singer guy. Like, you're a good drummer. So when the fuck did that start?
Wait, yeah, when did you come from? I didn't know that you played drums. I started playing drums at 2 years old. We're all drummers.
We got some drummers here. I'm the least proficient at the drums out of all of you. So where did that come from? Because I feel like the thing I like to do on the show is tie all the pieces together, right? Like how, you know, if you're a comedian and you're there tends to be there's an age old marriage between comedy and music, timing, cadence, you know, et cetera, dynamics, stuff that we all know and understand. And so there are things about percussion and a percussive intuition that I think really lends itself well to a lot of your comedic chops and stuff. And so I just wanted to know, did you ever study the drums? Did you ever study the piano? Like, where did the musicianship come in your life?
Well, thank you for those kind words, Darren. It means a lot. And I, you know, so much, the reason why I know we are all such huge supporters of making sure that arts education stays alive in not just the LA, for the LA kids, you know, it's like for all across the country, especially in areas where that exposure would not be happening even one iota. The drums, plain and simple, that same choir teacher that pulled me out from the back of the choir, you know, he was like his room, he had the music room. Like that was his space. And so during our choir practices, I noticed there was a drum set in the corner. And I said to him, hey, if I've ever got like a free period, do you mind if I come in there and pick up the sticks if nobody's in here and just kind of bang around on the drums? And he said, sure. So simply having the door unlocked,
just the, you know, access,
so that I could wander in at a time when everybody else is off at the food truck and, you know, talking shit and, you know, doing other things. I decided to be a weird loner, you know, muso kid and just go in and just lock that door and just bang around. And I'm totally self-taught. I just eventually got myself a really, really good, well-written letter to Santa. And I did the whole BB Gun Christmas Story thing. And after many years of convincing Santa that the neighbors wouldn't mind, I got a drum set one year and I just played it every single day. I would plug in my CD player. I put my headphones on and I would play along to lots and lots of different styles, and that's how I
who
learned.
Who play along to?
Well, yeah, like who? I want to know
who's,
who.
Who's your? Yeah,
I play. Well, you know, I was a teenager in the '90s, so I was very, very lucky that I had some of the best rock music, the Pearl Jam 10 album and the Nirvana album and Soundgarden.
You're playing along to Pearl Jam 10?
I was trying to. I was getting into trying to follow along with the ambidextrous, you know, Carter Beaufort, Dave Matthews Band riffs, and I was trying
to,
I was getting into, African.
You got to switch your grit.
Totally.
It's not crossover. Right, left.
And then I'd hear somebody do something with like a double bass thing. I'm like, wait, that's not. I can't accomplish that with one foot. What do I need? Wait. And so then I go get a double bass pedal. I'll be like, what is he doing there? And so I just listened, and a lot of world music. I learned a lot from listening to African pop stars and Irish music and Bodhran drums. And like, I don't know, I found myself really deep diving. And it wasn't until a rehearsal once during when I had become professional singer guy, I was in a rehearsal room and my drummer said, hey, you want to go, have you ever played one of these? I'm like, yeah, I played a little bit. And I started playing. And then all of a sudden we all started jamming and they're like, hey, you play. I'm like, I do? I'm like, yeah, do something in the show. I'm like, okay. And
yes,
so
you play.
It's been about, honestly, it's been about the push and it's been about access. And it's been about having the opportunity to even have those instruments near me at times where I could explore on them if I wanted to. And so that's why it's just so long story long, so important that that people have the access, that when they see an instrument that interests them,
no, you're absolutely
right. They have the opportunity to say, hey, do you mind if I pick that up and play around with it? It can change a life. It can absolutely change lives.
It's funny. It sounds like you're reading a page out of my dad's diary, because that's how he started playing drums as well. He was in a choir as a kid and saw a drum set in the corner and started skipping school to literally break into the choir room. He was in a choir that was a community choir. It wasn't even at his school. And so he would skip school, go to the community center, break into the band room and play drums all day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how that was his access point to being in music, was also singing and drums. But my question is, do you Don Henley it?
Yeah, to sing and play? I'm sure you could.
Or the band. I mean, I mean, oh my God.
Mickey Dolenz.
So many.
There's a lot
I actually have never, I've, that's one thing that I've been really interested there. I still have not had the opportunity to have a mic swung around while I'm playing and do it.
Oh,
I know. It's something that I actually think would be really a lot of fun. Maybe I'll start a band and do that. I think that would be a really fun next step.
Wait,
that'd be fucking,
I'm looking for something new to do. So that would be something fun, I think, for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can definitely, I like shedding this,
is a good
this idea.
This is a
nice
good thing.
I
tank.
Look forward to seeing where this goes in a couple.
I would pay money to see that. I know, I'm right here. I would pay to see that. I think that's like my favorite thing to see is when
leave on. I mean, because you're so attached to the rhythm of it, and it's so primal at that point that
exactly.
It's just there is something that, whether you know that's what's happening or not, when you're listening to it, something is happening. You don't know why it's happening. Like when I would listen to those early records, I didn't know that's what was actually happening on stage. I thought he had a drummer. And so when I went and watched it, I'd be like,
no.
Oh, that's why that note had extra punch. That's why he was so in the pocket. I didn't understand why I was feeling this way. And now I understand.
Oh
yeah.
Up on Cripple Creek. Cripple Creek.
Shit. Come on.
I'll give you guys the one of the top, definitely on the Mount Rushmore of these folks. I'll never forget when I realized that Phil Collins was playing drums.
The grand pinnacle.
Air tonight.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, what? What? He's doing that? Like, it just made the song so much more.
It was one of his more recent tours before he kind of sadly had to stop playing drums. He starts the show with like a 15-minute drum solo.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen all these clips, and it's unbelievable.
It's just.
And when it comes in, goof, 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 goof. And then all the fills that he's doing that are all in the holes of the I'm using quote fingers here, but the top line of his vocal, everything's weaving in and out of each other.
It's
in
a dance.
Way that only a drummer.
Well, you,
Esther, really
you probably
can,
feel
can
that
do.
Way too when you're playing and singing. I mean, there's something very rhythmic, very grounding to being able to sing and play bass and it's
a little different. I mean, my sister plays drums and sings, on tour. Playing bass and singing is a, it's definitely not the, like, I also play guitar and I can sing. That's a lot easier than playing bass and trying to be funky and singing at the same time. Thundercat does it really well.
Esty Haim does it very well. I just saw it the other day, man. Come on.
Thank you. It's, but I will go on record. Yes.
To you.
Thank you. I will go on record and say that it is not, that was a lot of me watching MTV Cribs and singing at the same time and playing. That was how I learned.
Yeah,
I was obsessed with MTV Cribs.
Unpack that for me. What are you playing bass to Cribs for?
Was there like a Seinfeld-esque theme song to Cribs?
No, you're watching Cribs. Yeah, yeah. No.
Yeah, like what is the...
No, not even. No, it was literally my way of concentrating on something, but also singing and playing bass to the song that I was singing. So there was something distracting me at the same time as practicing and singing at the same time. So I would be doing isolation, not thinking.
I see what you're saying. All right.
Yes. Wow.
Rubbing your tummy, patting your head, kind of.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so that, so okay. because that was my way of trying to teach myself how to do something with my hands while simultaneously trying to count how many cars
Ludacris has. Yeah, it's like
100%.
Yeah,
and which,
like,
is really hard.
And what's in the refrigerator?
How much
of Destiny's
Gatorade
Child?
Is in LL Cool J's refrigerator? Yeah,
these are the important questions. Wow.
Yes, oh, and
that's
clocking
fascinating.
It.
That's two sides of the brain. You're working two sides of the brain simultaneously, is what you're saying. Yeah,
exactly. Wow. Exactly.
Josh, you remind me of something that I feel like I have to say because I have never thought about it nor shared it. I never spoke about it in my life until you guys both just talked about this music room thing, but. I just realized, I haven't thought about this for years, but I too, during like lunchtime at my school, the choir teacher, the music teacher, Miss Trieste, let me just go into the music room like by myself. And I did this for years where instead of going to lunch with everybody, I would go into the music room and I would play her guitar and I would look at her little books of chords and I would play the auto harp. And I would play the auto harp and figure out which was my favorite because you get this button, right?
The auto harp was magic for me. That's G. I couldn't play guitar for shit. So having buttons on an auto harp, it was a wonderful experience. Incredible.
Yeah, magic.
It was the original Guitar Hero.
But that was my gateway drug. Yeah, it really was. Yeah. Yeah. You really felt like you were making a thing happen. So I would like play songs and go, I like these chords. And then I would pick, okay, that's a D, that's an A, and a G, and like all the basic chords. And I'd be like, okay, these are the ones I want to learn so I can play what I'm playing on the auto harp on this guitar. And I spent years, because I, same thing, I never like had any lessons on the guitar. And that was my formative thing with somebody leaving the door open saying, it's cool, have at it. And wow. So anyway, I'm just echoing the importance of that you guys are painting because I honestly haven't even thought about that for years. That was really such a huge turning point.
So you taught yourself how to play guitar?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
I've never
autodidact.
The only instrument I ever had any training on, which not for nothing, did help me with everything else was the violin. I trained like seriously and classically on the violin, and that kind of lended itself to like a lot of other things, because that's like such a sort of Jedi training kind of ear thing where like, yeah. So I want to ask Josh, and this is I know you have to tell this story a lot. Essie, I'm not sure if you know about this, but I think one of the legend of Josh Groban kind of getting in with David Foster and all these people, again, you guys can look this up. But I have a question about what the fuck is a rehearsal singer? Because the story goes that Josh allegedly was put in as a rehearsal singer for, I believe it was Andrea Bocelli.
Yep.
And we don't have to get into that story specifically, but I just want to know, what is rehearsal singer and why, and how do you find yourself in that position as a young man? Like, I just have never, I've never heard of that in my life. And I will echo this with a job that I saw during the Tonys that I just want to let people know about. When they're rehearsing for the Tonys, they have, just so you can have in real time an understanding of a live telecast, they have stand-ins who go up for the people that would win the award, but it's not like they just go up on stage. These stand-ins
go up and give speeches that they make up on the spot.
Yeah.
And they commit to it so hard.
They do.
And it's so incredible. I'm like, there should be an award ceremony for these improv artists that are making up these very heartfelt, and some of them go on like political tirades, and like, some people like keep it true to form. But anyway, so there's a whole world of like rehearsal versions of the real thing. And I'm like, what does a rehearsal singer do? How does that work?
Well, I mean, it's a really good question, because I'm not sure there is really such a thing. I mean, there are always, I think there are well, and I wasn't one. I mean, I was just a kid that David said, this is an opportunity in this exact moment where I can put him on this stage and really test him.
Ah, so it was like a ruse to get you to.
Yeah, it wasn't like, let me go through my Rolodex of rehearsal singers. This one will do. It was more of like, he'd heard me sing somewhere and asked me to sing at this rehearsal because he thought it would be a really fun, interesting opportunity for me. That being said, there are, as you all know, I mean, countless extraordinary working singers in Los Angeles that do all kinds of things. They do animation work. They do demos.
Singing,
they do session demos. They do background singing. They do all kinds, you know, that are among the finest vocalists that I've ever heard and most versatile vocalists that I've ever heard in my life.
Amen.
And I'm sure that there are lots of singers in LA that will swoop in at a moment's notice if somebody needs that kind of thing to happen. But you're right. I don't think at the Grammys, like, oh, Andrea Bocelli can't make his flight today, so let's get one of the many rehearsal singers out there to sing with Celine. It would have just been Celine, I think.
That's what I was, okay, this is comforting. Because I was like, that's not a job.
I don't think this was, I mean, I was 16 and a half years old. So, I mean, I was in high school. I was just basically like, I had to leave history class to go do this. So I think this was a thing where he said, I like this kid's voice. I'm going to throw him into the absolute lion's den and see if he gets eaten alive, because he's sick like that. And, you know, I survived.
So it was just David Foster trying it out, really just trying to figure out a way to get
this. Is
up
David
there.
Foster was at the piano. Celine is his friend. It's his song that's nominated. He was, the Grammys were not saying to him, find a singer. We need a singer up there. I don't think David might disagree, but I think it was more David saying, I've got my eye on this kid. This is an opportunity for me to throw him into the lion's den and see what happens. And
that sounds like some David Foster shit. I don't know the
guy,
but terrifying. That sounds like the kind of guy.
Terrifying.
But Esty, that's that thing you're talking about of somebody. This is like a great football coach. I'm going to do some bad football bad sports analogies now too. This is like, you know, because I watch Hard Knocks. I watch all that stuff, and you watch how they treat the rookies that are at risk of getting cut. And I've often found that sports psychology and music psychology are actually performance. It's all performance, and it's
exactly.
all
yeah. It's
you're
performance.
Very alone
you're
out there,
right.
And you know, there's a lot of similarities. And so I'll see how the coaches kind of play mind games with some of these kids that are on the bubble that may not make it onto the team and really have to show themselves. And they're not coddling; they're throwing them in and saying, "This is what the pressure of the NFL is. Can you make the pass or can you not?" And so David Foster definitely has that very tough love mentality, and he's not going to let you take any side doors. If he has his sights on you and he feels like you have potential, he's going to show you the door is open. I'm not going to say that it's not open, but the door is open. It's way over there, and you have to leave every pint of sweat and blood to get to that door. So I think that was it. It was like, 16-year-old kid, he's in high school. I'm here with Celine Dion at the Grammys. I've only heard him sing once on a cassette of some musical theater song. Yeah, maybe I'll have him come to the Grammys and sing with the number one selling female artist in the world. And let's see what happens. There was another situation where, like, I had bronchitis or something. It was one of the many, like, we did a lot of charity events together and galas. And, you know, he would introduce me as the kid that was sang with Celine, and it was all that. I said, David, I'm here, I'll do anything for you, but I'm having a heart. Do you mind if I just skip out on the high note? Can I just sing around it? I've got a little laryngitis. I just don't know if I can do it tonight. He goes, yeah, man, yeah, no problem. Just, you know what? It's just about the beauty of the singing word. Don't worry about the high note. So, oh my God, thank you so much. Thank you. I go out there. It was City of Hope or something like that. And we're approaching the part in the prayer where, you know, where it's supposed to go up. David has a mic at the piano, right? And he's playing along. And I'm getting to that point, and in my mind, I had already figured out a workaround. And David on mic goes, here comes the high note right before. And
absolutely not. Nope.
Fight or flight.
SC just gesticulated so wildly in
fight or flight kicks in. And that fucking note came out because I didn't have a moment to think about whether it would come out. It was such a shock to my system that I didn't have a moment to get scared. It was just like, oh, yeah. Okay. And it just popped out.
Wow.
So
that is some, that's shit.
That's
what he's known for. That's what David Foster's fucking
is an extraordinary mentor, an extraordinary supporter, one of the most fascinating and most genius people I've ever met in my life. We all need therapy.
I know. I literally just shit my pants.
Story.
Wow.
You know,
holy smokes.
Terrifying. But again,
what a guy to have in your corner. Seriously. Yeah. Wow. That's incredible.
As somebody who, look, I mean, I can knock on it, but like as somebody who came from that environment where I needed like the teacher to put me in the front of the thing, you know,
yes,
that was kind of, you know, it's when you go through the boot camp and you survive it, it makes you stronger. And so I view it as an opportunity. Would I ever do that to somebody? It's not my style.
Yeah.
To say the least, but did it make me a stronger, did it put another tool in my belt for the next 20 years of I've been through that and I know I can get through it. So I have had to, we all get sick. We're all jet lagged. We all have to do GMA at 5 a.m, whatever it is. It's like, we all have situations where we don't want to hit the note in this business, where we just don't want to do it. We're in Germany, we're in Japan. We're like, I'm tired. I don't feel good. And the more of those you get through and survive, the more you say to yourself, I can do it and I'm going to do it.
Totally.
It's your little magic feather.
I think 100%. That's a great sort of,
he knew what he was doing.
Yeah. That's awesome. Is there anything just, again, I'd like to tie it all together, you know, with all the things that you do as an actor, as a singer, as a producer, as a philanthropist, all the things, I think the three of us here are dot connectors. We like to kind of minimize the space between things and people and try and be a conduit for that. I think that's something that we all love in the performing space. But I'm wondering for you, what's the thing that really, like, what are you chasing at the end of the day? Like, what is the thing that you love the most that really kind of ties all of it together? It's a big question, but, you know, I think people, you know, I think it's reductive. If I was to call Josh Groban a singer only, that's reductive. I think there's so many, there's so many things that you do that you have to offer that I'd be curious, is there one thing that you love the most about all of it? Like that kind of, what's the thing that's driving that thing you do?
Well, I mean, it is a big question. You know, I think to a certain degree, even the people that I've met that are legends in this business and are 90 years old, are one of the things that makes them great is that they're still searching for the answer to that question at that age. You know, that we're all forever students. We're all forever trying to figure out where that next bolt of inspiration comes from, where that next thing that is a healthy fear comes from, and a challenge to yourself, a challenge to your audience. I think ultimately, this is also a business of pigeonholes. It's a business of building up and breaking down. It's a business of a lot of performance pressure and a lot of things that you hold yourself back, because the very things that can make you feel like you're on top of the world are the same things that can absolutely keep you from doing 10 other things that would actually provide some satisfaction for your soul, and having to clock those things constantly. So I think at the end of the day, it's a little bit all of the above. I think it's understanding those tools that have been developed, that have been hard earned, where you like know what your lane is and know that you're owning it, and I think is really important, but also not being afraid to dive into stuff that is a completely new realm and you might fall on your face. I think giving yourself permission to fail after you've had a lot of success and after you know people are really watching is the scariest thing to do. And so I'm constantly trying to put myself in a position where I find some of that bravery that I sometimes feel like I had more of at 16 years old when I had so much to lose. And so at the end of the day, it's all about connectivity.
When you had so much to lose, or before you had so much to lose?
Well,
sorry, I missed
before,
that part.
Yeah, I guess before I had so much. Now there is actually a lot to lose. Back then, I think that's a good point, is that a lot of that bravery came from being blissfully naive about
the fact
that. Yeah,
not knowing. So much to gain.
Not actually knowing
that
was the door. Yeah, and having to remind yourself of some of that blissful ignorance, just kind of going forth. No, 100%. I don't know. I also feel like I'm very lucky that I was never the fad. Like I never really felt like I fit in from a very young age, which was really kind of you know, back in the schooling days, and also just in music. I was having all the success, and at the same time, I also felt like, why am I having all the success? And I also feel like nobody's paying attention, and, you know, just kind of felt like this weird, like I was this weird, like, thing on the side that I was going, oh, that guy's weird and kind of killing it, but also mostly really weird.
Well, there's certainly been a sustainability to that, because when you look at yourself that way, you realize, well, that's actually ironically pretty nice, because you are the outside, you're an outlier, I think is the
you
word.
Realize, you know? You realize later on that all that time you were feeling kind of isolated in your own community, you're writing your own playbook, and you're doing something that actually gives you more Bravo. Avenues, more, you know, experiences. So, you know, now that I have a little bit of a playbook, and I feel very lucky that I can tap into a lot of those different things, I feel very, very fortunate. I just don't want to rest on that. I want to, at 90 years old, I want to still have that fire. I still want to feel like, what's that thing that can make me feel the good kind of scared again, the good kind of isolated again, on my own little path again.
Is there anything that you haven't done yet, other than Don Henley-ing your band?
So I want to start a band where I can play drums and sing at the same time. That's a new one that just developed today. So thank you.
You're
guys.
Welcome.
What's the new mountain? What's the thing? Anything that you're like, I still haven't done, I'd really like to get to it. I mean, you have done a number of things.
One thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately, because when I write music, oftentimes I'll find that trying to kind of squeeze it into the idea of a 3-minute arc or something, sometimes even thinking about the fact that I then need to sing it can sometimes be restricting. So I love writing long form. I love finding themes. I would love to dive more into non-vocal film and TV kind of composition. That's something that would be really fun for me. Doing scoring. Yeah. Yeah. That's something that I feel a lot of my experiences in tapping into a lot of different genres would really, really be fun for me to take off the pressure of the singer hat and just think about being like of service to the visual is something that really excites me.
Right. And also the pressure of lyrics.
The pressure of lyrics, which is always the, for me, I start with gibberish and music, and then it's like, same. What the fuck do I want to say here?
Same, same, yeah, same, yeah. Same, same, same. I think that's
the process.
We
haven't even talked about your skills as a pianist, so we didn't even talk about that, but yes, you are a musical guy. I think you would, because you have enough skills in the other places where you know how to make it, whatever it is, work. And I think there's you know, that's what it requires when you're scoring something, is really, again, tying the pieces together and maximizing moments. And yeah, I think that's definitely something you'd be great at.
It's collaborative, and you're forced to kind of get, you know, all the great film and TV composers that I know, they're writing from the heart, but then they also are totally understanding of the collaborative spirit of having to throw out some of your babies as well in service of whatever the edit is or whatever the script is doing or whatever the director has in mind. And I work really well in the collaboration. I'm not like a lone gun. I really like that spirit. It's what I love so much about theater, is what, when I found myself in a cast and we were all a cog in this beautiful wheel, it's like, oh, this is, I love this, because then it gives me fresh ideas and we're all bouncing off each other and we're trying to serve this bigger purpose, which in the music business, it can become very self-focused. It can become very kind of myopic about a singular vision. And I fly better in my soul when I have a lot of people I can bounce off of and share that.
So would you say, do you prefer the creative collaborative process over the performance process? Because that was kind of the question I was getting at when I was saying, what's the thing that you love doing the most? And you gave this beautiful, and I was sitting here just like applauding with all the sort of the platitudes and wonderful things that you were saying.
Did that just happen, or was that another conversation?
Whatever it was great.
I'm very
distracted. A lot of wonderful quotes that I'm going to hold to my heart as I tally forth. But
Wow.
You're
doing great, Josh. You're doing great.
A lot of usable things for social is perfect.
Can't wait to listen back.
But specifically, I was kind of saying like more the performance stuff, more the writing stuff. Is there stuff in all of it that you like the most? Like it sounds like, I don't know. I'll make it easy. I feel like I'm being too all over the place. I'll go back to my original question, which is, or do you prefer the creating, the studio, the A&Ring of the record, put that stuff together, or on the road performing with people? They're two sides of the same coin, but which one?
Yeah, they are. They're both exciting and they're both very rewarding, but it's a really, really easy answer. And there is nothing like performing. There is nothing like a live stage, a live audience, the ebb and flow of the energy that you have with a crowd. And I felt that way when I was the 7th grade theater kid and I stepped out on stage for the first time and felt that. I was like, oh, that's my bug. This is what I want to do. And as much as I love the being in the process of A&Ring and crafting and writing and going, oh, that's a cool idea. And like loving listening to that back over and over again in your car. And it's fun to create, but there is nothing like the energy of a live stage. I was from a young age. That was the bug that I had. And I still feel like that's, there's not even a close second to that.
That's, I mean, I, and
I'm with you. And I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm the same way. I echo everything you said. And I'm actually really excited to hear some of your scoring stuff. That's really exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear what comes next, man.
Well, this is, it's an interesting time. This certainly has been, and it's an interesting time for you guys to have a podcast like this where you talk to people about the process, and especially if there's kind of multi-hyphenate process and all that. I mean, this has been a time of really great reflection for a lot of people in the artistic community and a lot of people who can do a few different things. There's a little bit of a kind of who am I anyway, you know, kind of thing going on with a lot of people. And that goes across all jobs. But I think especially when you're a creative, just easily kind of, you know, organized mess of a creative brain, this has been a lot of time to really consider what things get you going and what things really would be exciting things to tap into. And I think that that's shared by a lot of people who are in music, who are maybe known for one thing, known for five things. There's a lot of looking in the mirror and saying, what inspires you? What would be a really fun, inspirational thing to do? And there's a lot of great risk-taking, a renaissance of risk-taking that I think is going to take place in the coming couple of years after this last year.
I agree. I too have felt that being a creative person within this time has forced you also to rise to the occasion of being creative and figuring out the creative ways to express yourself. And also, and going along with what you were saying about like also thinking about what this means for the rest of your career, and is doing something like this going to mean that I can't do something else, and how to allot your time. And I too have gone down the avenue of figuring out that I love scoring as well.
Oh, well,
yes.
You need a partner.
And I feel like, and I mean, Josh Groban, if you are in the Los Angeles area and you would like to come over and jam with me.
We could be the new Trent Atticus, I'm telling you.
Honestly,
I'll get you guys coffee.
Wow. I'm really going for that EGOT, so I would really, really enjoy.
I'm EGOT adjacent. I've been nominated for everything, but won nothing. So let's get there together. Let's do it. I have, you know what I have? I have an aluminum foil swan from Gladstone's that I have... that I have on my mantle that is just from when
it's
I was
a placeholder.
15 birthday party.
It's a placeholder.
There's still shrimp in it, but it looks great.
And may they stay forever until they may until replaced by other trees.
But I hear
that's
you.
The dream, right? Is just to be, I mean, I think that's the great the blessing and the curse of this time has been that it's been a time where there's creative outlets that I know are within all of us that we haven't had the time or access to, but because we're just kind of sitting at home, and you know, I released a record in the middle of a pandemic, and it was very weird to then not tour it right after.
Oh yeah, same.
Yeah,
both of
so,
you guys. That's right.
You know, my sisters and I kind of said this, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, was I think that everyone that released a record within this time is going to like have a t-shirt, like we're all going to be part of some weird club that's like, you know, I released a record in the middle of a pandemic and all I got was this fucking shirt.
Literally all I got was this shirt. Yeah, exactly.
Fucking shirt.
Yeah.
But yep. I do think that it's something that, I mean, again, like the music is not to get, you know, super cornball, but like the music is within you. And I think that it's like, it's something that you would be doing a disservice to yourself to not express it and have something like, you know, being able to score a movie or a TV show, especially in this time when you have the time, I think is really exciting. And I know from experience and just the show that I scored is coming out on Friday, and it's the first thing that I
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, that's spectacular.
It's on Netflix. It's called Made.
Amazing.
And starring Margaret Qualley and Nick Robinson. That is a shameless plug. But I'm really excited about it. It's also really scary because this is the kind of the first thing that I've done on my own without my sisters. But at the same time, it was really like freeing and nice. And it didn't feel like there was, you know, there wasn't as much you know, again, pressure with like lyrics and stuff. And there was something really beautiful about just being able to like kind of throw the spaghetti against the wall melodically and, you know, with harmony and just kind of let it happen. And I think it was something that I'd never done before.
This is exactly what Josh was saying. These are the risks that people are coming out, you know, and coming out of the woodwork going, okay, well, let's give it a go. I think you're absolutely right, Josh.
Well, I don't know you, but I'm super proud of your adventure and I'm super proud of your bravery to do that. And I think you're representing exactly what we're all feeling and you're putting it to action.
Thank
and
you.
I cannot wait to do
it. I have to tell you, before we got on this call, I was psyching myself up because, you know, I think that being Angelinos and having like a very, very similar, you know, like obviously we went to the same high school, but I do feel like a kinship to you because I think that we've kind of had this similar experience. And so I just wanted to like say thank you for getting on the phone with us. It was really, really cool.
Oh man,
like, thanks for
really,
chatting
really
us, man.
Cool
thank you.
To talk to you. And you know, and I know that being LOXA alumni, every time I'm with other alumni, they're like, have you met Josh Groban yet? And I'm like, no, man, haven't met. It's like Josh Groban.
By the way, same goes for you and your sisters. Like I every time it comes up, like, no, it's when you mentioned, do I even know about it? Like it's you're such a shining example of that experience and the success of that experience and why it matters so, so much. So thank you for continuing to be an exemplary example of what it can do.
This makes me happy.
I feel the same way. What I was trying to get to before, sorry, I know that we kind of got off track, but what I was trying to say was seeing you perform and seeing when I was 14 was one of the reasons that I wanted to go to LOXA.
Man.
So thank you for doing that. And that was such a...
You just made my month.
So yeah, that was a very big part of the reason that I decided to take this leap and, you know, not go to North Hollywood High School, you know, around the corner from my house in the Valley.
Take that, North Hollywood.
Yeah, North Hollywood High School.
I'm verklempt. On behalf of myself and all your many millions of fans around the world, thank you for making that decision. And thank you for being,
you know, thank you. No, I really appreciate everything that you said. And
that means everything to me, Esty. Thank you very much.
Oh,
thank
you, man.
I can think of no better place to close this full circle interview. Josh, thank you so much for your time. And seriously, you're truly an inspiration.
Look at us. We rallied.
And,
we rallied.
I know. We did it.
It's fun chopping it up, man, with you.
It's therapy for me to be able to connect with two extraordinary people and talk about things we love very much. And I hope we can all get together in person sometime.
Yes, when you're in L.A., I literally...
Yeah, stay out till 6 in the morning at someone's house.
Yes.
For sure.
Ski and a conversation.
We're going... Let's go to Darren's house and take a dip in the goddamn
pool. No, guys, let's find a Marriott.
This episode of That Thing I Do is brought to you by Marriott, putting Josh Groban, Darren, Chris, and Esty Heim up for free in a hot tub somewhere with some whiskey.
If we don't get a free room after this episode, I swear to God, someone is doing something wrong. Someone is doing something wrong.
Josh, thanks so much
for
your time, man. We love you. We appreciate you, man. And break a leg, man. We'll see you out there.
You're the best. Thanks, Darren. Thanks, Esty.
Bye.
That Thing I Do is a presentation of Cadence 13 Studios.
If you like the show, which I know you do, please be sure to like us, follow us, and leave a glowing review.
Thank you for listening to our show. We'll see you next time.